This week we begin our study of the book of Proverbs with Proverbs chapter 1. The opening verse of the book attributes the book, or at least the bulk of it and the beginning of it, to Solomon, son of David, king of Israel. Well, we are familiar with him. We've been studying Solomon's life and works for a few months now. For the last 2 weeks, we have covered his Psalms. And it comes as no surprise to us that he has a book of Proverbs. 1 Kings 4:32 says that he had written 1,005 Proverbs, so it makes sense that they would be collected in a book. I haven't done any kind of exact count, and it is hard to tell exactly what one would count as a proverb and what one would exclude, but I'd estimate that we have around 600 Proverbs of Solomon contained in this book, along with other wise writings. My presumption is that he wrote at least some other things that are not included here. The book of Proverbs is divided into a few distinct sections. The first 9 chapters are writings about wisdom in a longer poetic form, but starting in chapter 10, we have the Proverbs themselves, couplets, often contrasting from line to line about wise living. These run through chapter 29. The last 2 chapters of the book are not Proverbs of Solomon. Chapter 30 is the words of Agur, and then in chapter 31, the words of Lemuel. So, for the next few weeks, we will be in the opening 9 chapters. Today, in chapter 1, we will read Solomon's introductory remarks about wisdom. This will include his famous claim that the fear of Jehovah is the beginning of wisdom, his exhortation to avoid joining with those who seek out evil schemes, and his personification of wisdom as one who calls out her warning in public. Here, we will learn the beginning of wisdom and how we define wisdom and of the results of ignoring wisdom. If you have not yet read Proverbs chapter 1, now would be an excellent time to do so. The first 7 verses of today's chapter are something of a prologue. Verse 1 tells us what we've already discussed, that Solomon is the author of today's content. And then in verses 2 through 6, we read the purpose of the book. That purpose is to give instruction in righteousness, justice, and equity. Contemplating the book and understanding it will give wisdom to the simple, including the young who do not know, but will also edify the wise men who listen. However, we note also that understanding wisdom is not always easy. Sometimes wisdom is concealed in riddles. We might have to think to figure out some of these things, but then if a person is to live with wisdom, he will have to think, won't he? Verse 7 rounds out our prologue by telling us the first step to attaining wisdom. That step is to fear Jehovah. Jehovah is the source of all truth and wisdom, and a person can only attain that wisdom by revering him. Foolish people will ignore God and will not receive his instruction. More on that when we get to our life application. Having the fear of God as our starting point, we begin our study of wisdom. The first step, we are told in verses 8 and 9, is that the son should hear and should not forsake the teaching of his parents. Now, we know that all parents are not wise, and that even wise parents are not always wise. In fact, I have long believed that as a general rule, one of the curses of our generation has been that our parents' generation broke away from historical Christianity in major ways and have not given us sound advice. However, the Proverbs say to adhere to the teachings of our parents not as an absolute, but as a generality, and the Proverbs are often like that. It holds true that usually parents will have at least something valuable to teach their children. If nothing else, a parent has lived longer than his child and has experienced more, and as a result, he knows more. And being a parent, he has, at the very least, managed to survive in this world long enough and successfully enough to generate offspring and has kept them alive long enough to hear his teaching, which in itself is no small feat. But even where individual parents may fall short, the wisdom of our fathers collectively has been handed down to us here in the Scriptures. These words are time-tested. They are not the opinion of some one father. They have been handed down generation after generation, and they have been tried. Had there not been wisdom in this book, my supposition is that Solomon's descendants probably would not have preserved it, and religious leaders would not have adopted it as part of their scriptures, and it would not have survived to us to be read almost 3,000 years after the fact. Such teachings as these, Solomon likens to a graceful garland for the head and a pendant for the neck. They are a thing of beauty and value, a good thing for life. In contrast to this wisdom of our fathers, verses 10 through 19 describe for us the worthless talk of the crowd of sinners. The schemes invented by your peers are not time-tested, and they may or may not work. And if they are sinful schemes, contrary to the teachings of the scriptures handed down to you by your fathers, then you should bet that they will not. The specific scenario described by Solomon is that of a gang of thugs who attempt to convince a person to shed the blood of the innocent. The plan is to hide and wait for them, and then ambush them and kill them, sending them down to Sheol, that being the grave, so that they can take their things. The scheme is murder and robbery of the innocent. Well, that is not a wise thing to do. In fact, compared against the scriptures, even as simply as the Ten Commandments, which prohibit both murder and stealing, it is very obviously sinful. And as schemes to get rich quick go, this isn't a good one. You might be aware that people don't like murderous thieves and generally don't tolerate them. Lying in wait to make an ambush tends to bring social blowback. A thief would have a hard time maintaining his theft for long enough to pile up as much wealth as an honest man could by working. Solomon said that we should not follow such people as they run toward evil. Solomon says that even a bird will see when a man spreads a net for him, and he will not fall into it. These thieves are not as bright as the birds in that they apparently can't see what's coming for them. They are doing that which only a man is both smart enough to do and dumb enough to do. They are setting a trap for themselves. Verse 19 tells us that the greedy, that is, those people who value property more than they value righteousness, and who will therefore do injustice so that they can gain, set a trap for themselves. Their unjust gain takes away their lives. So learn a lesson here. Justice is better than personal gain. And so here we have a choice. Should we listen to the wisdom of our fathers or to the foolishness of the crowd? The answer is obvious. We ignore wisdom to our peril. Solomon personifies for us wisdom as a woman crying aloud in the streets and the markets and at the gates of the town, a warning for all of us to hear. She cries out to all of the fools who hate knowledge, offering them an ultimatum, a choice between two options, either that they will turn to wisdom or be destroyed by their own folly. If only the fool will turn, then Lady Wisdom says she will pour out her spirit upon him and make her words known to him. Wisdom is not unattainable. It saturates the town if only one will take the time to listen. But for those who will not listen and who will stubbornly ignore her counsel and who will persist in their foolish ways, terror will strike them like a sudden storm, and calamity will overtake them, and in the day of their ruin, Lady Wisdom will mock them for it. There will be no sympathy. They were warned not to set this trap for themselves, but they did it anyway. And once their failures are so far gone, then perhaps having learned the hard way, they will turn back to wisdom, but it will be too late. Lady Wisdom says in verse 28, "They will call upon me, but I will not answer. They will seek me diligently, but will not find me." We should remember that sin has consequences, and foolishness has consequences, and sometimes there is no escape from them. So I strongly encourage the young people listening to me today, learn your lessons the easy way. Learn your lessons by hearing of the disaster which might befall you and avoid that disaster rather than finding out for yourself by living through the disaster. Lady Wisdom said that foolishness would bear fruit, and once it bore bad fruit, the foolish would be made to eat it. Their complacency, their negligent failure to choose wisdom, would destroy them. In contrast, those who would simply listen to wisdom would dwell in security. A quick note before we move on to our applications. Lady Wisdom's quote ends here in the last verse of chapter 1. However, we should remember that the length of quotes can be difficult to discern in Scripture because there are no quotation marks in the original language. So one question I had to ask myself in preparing today's message was where in the passage I had to stop preaching. We read in verses 20 and 21 that Lady Wisdom cries aloud, and so we know it is appropriate to give her a quote, but then we have to ask where to stop. In this case, I think the answer is fairly obvious because Lady Wisdom speaks in the first person. In verse 23, for example, "I will make my words known to you," or verse 28, "then they will call upon me," and ultimately in verse 33, "but whoever listens to me." So Wisdom clearly speaks until the end of chapter 1, at least. And it is a good place to end both the quotation and the chapter because chapter 2 opens with the words, "My son." Here Solomon takes back over his speech. We note that this section of the book also opened in verse 8 with the words, "Hear, my son." It appears that Solomon formulaically used the words, "my son," as a divider of sections throughout the opening of Proverbs. We find them again at the opening of chapter 3 and midway through that chapter at verse 21, at the opening of chapter 4 and midway through that chapter at verse 20, at the opening of chapters 5 and 6, and so forth. Clearly, whomever supplied for us our chapter and verse numbers and whomever translated for us did a good job by ending Lady Wisdom's quote and closing the chapter here. In opening our application today, we must ask, what is wisdom? I like the definition which Wayne Grudem gives us in his Systematic Theology. There, in describing the communicable attributes of God, he describes God's wisdom, and he says that wisdom is, quote, choosing the best goals and the best means to those goals, end quote. That makes a lot of sense to me. We can see that there is a distinction between wisdom and knowledge. Knowledge is just something that is known. Any person, whether he fears Jehovah or not, can know that 2 + 2 = 4. There have been many foolish men who have known much about calculus or chemistry or any other field of study. But knowledge does not make a man wise. Having knowledge does not necessarily give a person the right goals, and it does not necessarily tell a person the right way to achieve those goals. We know, though, that God is the fundamental source of truth. As the source of all truth, he knows all things, and his knowledge includes knowing the right goals and the right way to achieve them. God is all wise and is the source of all wisdom. He is the definition of right against wrong. His word gives us morals, and he will be the final judge of how we behave, and thus he is the first and final standard of what is right. What is right or wrong without God are subjective and unanswerable questions. For example, to come from an unbelieving worldview, if there is no fundamental standard, then right might just be achieving one's own pleasure. And one might decide that the easiest and fastest way to achieve one's own pleasure might be to gain pleasure at the expense of others. I have heard an atheist say, "I got what I wanted, and that means I was right." Well, that isn't a very good philosophy, of course, because it ignores the fundamental reality of a moral standard and a final judgment. Without God, then, a person cannot truly know what is the right goal or the right way to achieve it. Is the goal to make the most money by any means necessary? To destroy the lives of anyone who looks at you sideways? To bed as many lovers as possible? To recognize the ultimate futility of mortality and to eliminate your pains by killing yourself as quickly as possible? Many people have had such goals. Are they the best goals? And are they achieved in the best ways? As it turns out, no, those ways are not wisdom. The fear of Jehovah is the beginning of wisdom. If we want wisdom, we must know what it is to be right, and we must know the right ways to go about being right. Fearing God is the first step to knowing that. Unbelievers may give you knowledge, but they won't give you wisdom. Today's passage is emphatic that without wisdom, disaster will strike. Now, obviously, this is not an absolute. Sometimes people do foolish things and walk away unscathed, and sometimes people do wise things and are thwarted. That's not usually the outcome, but it does happen. And as we've discussed before, punishments and rewards tend to come generally and not just individually. A foolish person living in a society of wise people might end up faring better in life than a wise person in a foolish society, just because a rising tide lifts all boats. Indeed, we know that some of the most foolish societies make a habit of harming their wisest people, simply because wisdom grates against their lifestyles. But as a general rule, wisdom is the personally beneficial path, and foolishness is the detrimental one. And of course, wisdom is the socially beneficial path as well. As we work through the book of Proverbs, we should be careful to remember that it is a book of generalities. It is intended to give us generalized social truths, but not always hard mathematical absolutes. 2 + 2 = 4. Usually, the person with good goals and functional knowledge of how to achieve those goals will be successful. But sudden, unavoidable catastrophes or injustices can happen to us all. So we should always take Proverbs with that little grain of salt. We should not demand success as a promise simply because we apply these proverbs, nor should we blame every person who fails as having been a fool. But the generality does hold true. If wisdom means having the best goals and the best means of going about those goals, well, we expect that a wise person would prosper. In general, it is hard to see how he could not. If a person has the best goals, then achieving those goals will be good for him and others around him. And if he has the best means of achieving those goals, then I suppose he will be most likely to achieve them. To the contrary, a person who has bad goals will get bad outcomes which do not serve either his best interest or the best interest of the people around him. We should hope that he doesn't know the best means of achieving these goals. On the other side of that coin, if a man has excellent goals but does not know how to achieve them, then he also will not be successful. So it is almost by definition that we expect the wise man to prosper and the fool to come to ruin. Even some of the seemingly unavoidable catastrophes might be avoided by wisdom. If a wise man is using the best means to achieve his goals, he will do so carefully. He is more likely to avoid a freak accident than is the fool, for example. And so it holds generally true, disaster strikes without wisdom, and success follows wisdom. And so as we study the book of Proverbs, this is the main theme to look forward to. What are the right goals, and what is the right way to achieve those goals? Today's passage gives us an opening look at that. The example given today is that of a group of people who decide to gain wealth by robbing. In verse 13, they stated their goal. We shall find all precious goods. We shall fill our houses with plunder. Well, obtaining valuable things isn't necessarily a bad goal. However, these foolish people do not go about it in the right way. Their method is, let us ambush the innocent person without reason. That is obviously not the right way to obtain wealth. To obtain wealth in that way is a violation of God's laws, which explicitly prohibit stealing and violently harming the innocent without cause. The action is unjustifiable, and we have discussed many times why stealing is harmful not just to the person who is robbed, but to all of society. We all want the fruits of our labors. To take them unjustifiably is to deny our neighbor his right to his property, and it violates our fundamental principle that we should love our neighbor as ourselves by doing unto others as we would have them do unto us. A person deprived of that which he has earned loses his motivation to do valuable work to continue earning, and a person who earns without creating value also has no motivation to create value. If stealing is allowed to go on for too long, eventually work will become unprofitable and people will give up on trying. And if they have been treated with violence, they will learn to respond with violence until all of society is just worthless people creating nothing of value and fighting each other for the scraps left over from the former generation that did create. Stealing harms everyone. We note, however, that this passage does not deny the value of using force when force is rightly justified. For example, if a thief steals a thing, it is good for a more powerful force to go and take back what was stolen. The error displayed here is not taking by force itself, it is taking by force when the cause is unjust. It is wrong to lie in wait to ambush the innocent for no reason. It is not wrong to punish the guilty. So today's example of wisdom is this. The thieves may have had a good goal, but they were going about it the wrong way. It is wise not to fall in with them. Why? Because their actions bring about harm for society, and if the society is just, then they will bring harm on themselves when their crimes are punished. They are not wise, and it is wise to avoid them and their ways. To conclude, then, Proverbs is a book of wisdom, most of which, and today's portion of which, was written by Solomon. In today's passage, Solomon introduced his topic, first telling us his purpose for writing, namely that the simple and the wise alike should be edified. He also told us the first principle of wisdom, that being the fear of Jehovah. Solomon continued by urging us to accept wisdom, contrasting the value of those words which have been passed down through the generations against those which have been dreamed up by sinners, and warning us, in the personification of Lady Wisdom, of the disaster which could befall us if we fail to listen. My encouragement to you, then, is that you will listen as we study through this book, and that you will diligently study here to learn wisdom, and that you will apply wisdom to your life to avoid disaster, learning both the right goals and the right way to achieve those goals. For those of you who are listening to this message away from your computer and are looking for more like it, you can find us at eastjordan.church.